Welcome to Psyched for Business, helping business leaders understand and apply cutting-edge business psychology principles in the workplace.
Hi, and welcome to Psyched for Business. I'm Richard Anderson. In today's episode, I'm joined by Rohin Agarwal, founder at Promptability. In our discussion, we talk about all things generative AI, what we already know, the direction of travel, and the importance of being able to use AI to perform at the highest level in the workplace. Thanks again for listening. I hope you enjoy the episode.
Rohin, welcome to Psyched for Business. Thanks for joining me. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Rich. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And I'm delighted, I have to say, to have you on. I feel like I've got to know you fairly well over the last couple of months. And we've been doing lots of work together. And Promptability is a really exciting tool. It's a really exciting concept. I'm really keen as part of this podcast to get into the nitty-gritty and how you started that and why you started it and all of that sort of stuff. And we'll go into that in a second, Rohin. But would you mind just really quickly maybe introducing yourself, kind of who you are, what you do, maybe a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and again, thanks for having me on, Rich. So my background broadly is in education, skills and employment, and I've come at it more from a strategy and a tech point of view. So over the years, kind of, I used to be a management consultant and worked in finance for a bit. And since then, I haven't had kind of a real job, you could say, for nearly a decade. And I started off with a careers tech platform called ThinkSmart, it's actually very relevant to what we're going to go on to, but we crowdsource problems from people in different jobs, got them to solve them, and then help them to figure out what path might be for them, whether they're kind of 16 or 64. Then, because of COVID, actually, that kind of online learning landscape really accelerated, as you can imagine. So I ended up doing a lot of advisory work for clients in loads of different areas, from anywhere from online high schools to online degree programs to online products that might help the unemployed get back to work. So that's been really the core of my background over the last kind of 6-7 years is strategy and tech products in this landscape. And then, yeah, we can come on to what kind of, you know, what maybe inspired the next step. So now at the moment, it's a balance between what we're going to come on to and still some advisory work with those clients.
Brilliant. No, that's really interesting background there. So Promptability is the latest tool, unless there's anything that you haven't told me.
Not yet.
But just looking on your website here, Rohin. So what we do, our mission at Promptability is to understand and improve people's use of generative AI, such as ChatGPT and Bard, for the benefit of the organizations that they work for. Tell me a little bit more about that, and maybe let's assume that the listeners might not know what generative AI is. They may not have a great deal of experience or knowledge with ChatGPT, although it is ubiquitous. Everybody's talking about it these days. But let's make no assumption. So tell me a little bit more about kind of what inspired Promptability and a little bit more about what you do.
Yeah, of course. Thanks. The initial inspiration was when I'd worked in the data science market a little bit, looking at training companies that help people upskill in data science. Similar thing, that was kind of the trend, the hype cycle for a while, was everyone was talking about it. And I was looking at it thinking, well, organizations, chief execs, senior people, they hear these buzzwords, but they're thinking, how do you actually make this practical before I start investing loads of money in tools or loads of money in training and so on? And I thought at the time, there wasn't really a quick diagnostic or assessment in data science. I don't think there is still even now, but I kind of had that at the back of my mind when this ChatGPT hype was kind of going. And I was very lucky to get a bit of a head start on it with a company I was involved with called Autogen AI, where the founders there have made amazing strides in helping people to better write bids and proposals using this technology. So the technology itself essentially is like having a personal assistant next to you. It's got the world's kind of published work at your fingertips, and it predicts, you ask a question, and it will then go to that library and predict the best fit words, essentially, based on your question. So it's really important. It's not Google. People have to always remember, it comes up with text that is very convincing that a human could have written it, but that text is not sourced directly from any material. It's almost like a brain that's coming up with a plausible set of words based on what you put into it. So you could actually chat to this for quite a long time. And the danger is it looks very, very real. And so with this curve, hype curve, you're seeing all the business press, and like you said, it's kind of, you feel like it's everywhere. But actually, if you're a business person responsible for a team or a company, I think you're still thinking, and lots of these surveys suggesting the same, where do we start?
Mm.
And that was, again, where I went, and we can come on to sort of, I don't have the expertise in business psychology, but Ben, who you know very well, my business partner on this, was someone I said, look, if this is the problem to solve, could we become one of the first in the industry to produce kind of a low stakes assessment to help people understand where to even start?
Yeah. And when you had those conversations with Ben, were you thinking of using, you know, this tool or this idea that was obviously embryonic at the time, were you thinking about using that with existing employees and organizations, or were you thinking of people to recruit based on these types of tools, or what was kind of your mindset at the time?
Yeah, I think the target is existing, or was existing employees. So from what I understand, and again, the psychologists will have kind of a better answer on this maybe, but the burden, and I'm sure actually with your work, Rich, you'll see this, is the burden of the validation and what you have to go through if it's in a recruitment context. It's very different to a kind of personal development context. And I think that's where things in this industry in generative AI are changing every day. So people may have seen the videos of, like, first there was ChatGPT, then there's stuff that's able to create videos for you, and Google have brought out something called Gemini. So we were thinking it's probably not fair or right at this stage to make it a recruitment test, although we are hearing from clients, actually, is that possible? The first step was, a lot of people are worried, a lot of people actually are scared about it, a lot of people feel quite pressured into starting to use it. How can we help enable them to use it? And that was where, exactly to your point, it was about existing employees and then helping them to figure out what training and what steps to take to get them upskilled.
Because as you say, I mean, it's incredible the types of things that you can do with it. There was a colleague of mine, Will, who first brought ChatGPT to our offices. Whenever the kind of launch was, kind of middle or early part of last year, and he was saying they could do really cool things. It can write poetry like that. It can do it in the style of Dr. Seuss and all of this sort of stuff. And he was showing off to the office. And I think at the time there was a tremendous amount of concern, I think, among the staff internally, and as I understand it, that's probably shared across the board, or certainly was shared across the board. So are these tools, Rohin, in your view, are they there to enhance or support us in a work context, or replace us? Have you got any views on that side of things?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because you've got the sci-fi angle, haven't you, and where we sort of think the bots are taking over. My view of the technology as it is today is that it's like, it kind of gives you a bit of a superpower that if you use it right and you use it well, it should help you do your job better, quicker, hopefully increase your quality of life. Because a lot of the mundane tasks where employees, and I'm sure some of your employees may say the same, where you think it's quite repetitive or they're stuck for ideas and so on, that's where it can help really nicely. And with other clients, we have the conversation we're having increasingly, it's not that this is going to take your job. But somebody who uses this better than you, or really takes the time to become fluent, may well look more attractive to employers and do their job better. You know, the statistic, we're still going to have to see how this plays out. But my gut feeling is you'd be kind of going into your job with one arm tied behind your back. It's a bit less of saying, I'm not going to use Google, I'm not going to use the iPhone. If you believe this is a fundamental technology shift, then I think, Rich, is that would be my view, is that you're at danger of maybe losing out to in the labour market. I don't see yet. I think it's that classic thing of where people overestimate maybe the short term, but underestimate maybe like the 5-year stretch. So if we had this conversation in 5-10 years, maybe it's slightly different. And you know, maybe electric cars are a good example. Actually, how many cars are driving on their own around the streets at the moment? Not. Yeah, that's made, you know, there's some analogies there maybe.
Yeah, so you were talking about, Rohin, people using it, or people potentially using it better than you. And I think that's a really, really crucial point, because you get out of these things what you put in. So Tell me about a GPT and what we're talking about with ChatGPT as an example for the listeners. Because I've certainly noticed firsthand, if you give it or prompt it with a bit of a wishy-washy prompt message, you know, give me X, Y, and Z, you're probably going to get some stock response. It'll be good to a point, but it might not be what you're exactly looking for at that time. So it's really, really crucial how you prompt these tools, how you ask the questions, and how you give it the information that it needs in order to get back what you need. That's a key part of this, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great point. And actually, as you were describing this, I was thinking in the day-to-day workplace before ChatGPT and so on, like if you sent a poorly constructed email to someone in your team, they'd probably have the right to come back to you and say, like, you know, Rich, that wasn't very clear. I really don't know what you're wanting from me. With kind of the analogies a little bit like the chatbot, it's the same thing. If you put a poor instruction in or a poorly worded prompt, it's going to do the best it can, a bit like one of your employees, but you shouldn't expect it to kind of have the 100% answer. And I think, the last pillar of the promptability assessment, where we looked at it, you know, in order to come up with the assessment, we interviewed experts, did research as to what is important in order to prompt well, is about that prepare, review, you know, make sure you do the right steps and take more time at the start that will save you time afterwards. And I think that's, if you prompt badly, it could actually be counterproductive. Longer, you get frustrated with it. So exactly, you've got, you know, adding examples, adding context, all these things are features of a good prompt writer. And actually, if you go back to the email, probably not a bad analogy. If somebody sent you an email that was really clear, you know, phrased well, maybe with example, maybe with context, you're probably going to understand it better.
Yeah, well, you are, absolutely. And I like that analogy. I think it's a really, really good one. And I was just thinking to myself, when I started using ChatGPT, which I use multiple times a day now, I have to say, it just makes my life a tremendous amount easier work-wise. Even things like, just to digress slightly, even things like, you know, blog writing and support, maybe with LinkedIn posts and little things like that. I remember once there was a colleague of mine a couple of years ago who'd written a brilliant blog, a brilliant article, but was struggling for ages on a conclusion of that. It sounds so simple, a conclusion, but trying to conclude the article and trying to give some really interesting next steps. These days, if you put a decent prompt into ChatGPT, you'd have had inevitably a really great conclusion built from that. So I'm much, much better than I was. And I think that's through trial and error. It's through practice. But I'm still nowhere near the level that I think I could or potentially should be for the prompts that I give. Where do you think we are as a, you know, let's just use the UK, for example, in UK business. It's a very generic question maybe, but where do you think we are in terms of our ability to prompt well?
Yeah, it's really interesting actually when you say about ability. So I think our ability is probably pretty good because the fundamental skills it requires in terms of logic, actually a strong component is English language skills. So the UK in some ways could have an advantage because these models are trained on English language. People who've done the assessment early kind of think, oh, actually, I didn't realise that a lot of the good writing skills, business writing, logic, they're actually quite transferable. So I think the UK business probably does have ability. The two bits that I would add to that, though, to counter it, is the knowledge of risks, limitation, biases, hallucinations. You know, when it does things that you don't expect or you think that's wrong, we're noticing that element is probably lacking because that's about awareness and about people wanting to investigate things. And I think the point is the average employee probably hasn't even, your median employee probably hasn't even logged into ChatGPT. It's not necessarily their problem or their fault. It's about raising awareness, them realizing the benefits. So I think the opportunity may or may not be there, depends on the workforce culture and the company. Some of them ban it. Whereas actually, if you get on the playing field, we think the ability might well be there. So it's the opportunity, the motivation, and so on.
I mean, that's a really, really good point. It's probably, I've made a couple of assumptions there wrongly, that I think maybe, Rohin, just because I work in a small business and there's, you know, we've got a handful of staff, you know, primarily in the office together, and we'll talk about these things and just make assumptions that people are always using ChatGPT because we're always talking about it and it's a big part of what each of us do individually. But for a lot of, I would imagine, bigger organizations, then, as you say, there's people likely not using ChatGPT
at all. Yeah, of course. And some will ban it, you know, if it's for good reason. Some may, but the trouble is, it's okay banning it, but that time lag that organizations are taking to figure out how to use it, that's the bit where you still need to kind of increase awareness, and you could still do certain things that allow your workforce to get, you know, to get upskilled. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do we, it's a bit of a maybe a broad question, but how do we increase awareness, would you say, among those organizations that maybe either, well, ChatGPT, for example, hasn't come on their radar yet, or?
Yeah, I think the early adopters point, someone asked me this question yesterday. I think there's almost like the positive and the kind of maybe less optimistic view, that one is showing good examples of where it actually makes an impact in the business environment. So there are early studies showing productivity gains and so on, but I think the jury's probably a bit still out. These are early studies. We need more and more data and more examples of success stories. And the other, which is slightly, and in some geographies this plays better than others, where there's more of a risk aversion, is to say, if you do believe this is a fundamental shift, which I think it is, it's important not to use it badly. It's almost like a compliance angle.
Yeah.
That there's also importance to raise awareness that it's a great tool, but you can't just go and quote an academic paper from it, because that academic paper might not exist.
Yes.
And then that has huge implications if you use it in the wrong context. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's those two, you know, I think it's both, actually. It's, it can be used really well to improve productivity, but it could also be used very badly and cost you. So it's kind of two sides.
Yeah. So it's making sure that people are aware of both of these things and how to use it correctly, I think most importantly. So obviously that's a lot of the work that you've been doing alongside Ben with Promptability. Obviously you've created a tool, an assessment that gauges somebody's ability somebody's ability, so how good somebody is at prompting these types of tools. Tell me a little bit more about that, if you wouldn't mind going a little bit more depth about what you've actually built.
Yeah, thanks. So we, a few steps to the process was firstly doing our own research of what does a prompt engineer, I mean, it's a grand title, it's more of a skill of like writing with these chatbots. What do they do? What tends to characterize good ones? And then we put together an expert panel of some prompt engineers from the market, some data scientists, some teachers, actually, because actually it's really useful to get the angle of people who are teaching these kind of skills. Yeah. And we put together a profile, and then this is, you know, I'll defer to the psychometricians who know this better, but essentially they were able to say, we think these four pillars make for somebody who shows good ability. So we had knowledge of limitation, risks and biases, which I mentioned, because that's an important bit to know the limitations of it. Motivation, super important, because actually it doesn't matter how good you are. If you've not got the right role models, people around you, opportunities, then you're never going to use it.
Yeah.
And actually, we thought maybe that's less relevant, but in conversations with firms, they're really interested in that because it gives them a so what, because actually that's a clear area you can work on if your employees are not motivated. The other area is about essentially business writing skills, English language, which makes sense in terms of what you said, Rich. And then lastly, specifically for prompt writing, how well do you go about your business of writing that prompt? Do you prepare for it? Do you think about examples? Again, do you spend time thinking about the email before you send it, to use that analogy?
Yeah.
How well do you think? Do you put an attachment in it? You know, do you add some context? Do you give examples? So those four pillars we use to then create the test. And obviously, with thanks to you and the team at Evolve Assess, we then needed, you know, a platform in which to take that. So we created the test, put together, you know, a methodology, a scoring, so that everybody gets an individualized report with some recommendations, and everyone can take that, see their data, see their outcome through the Evolve Assess platform that we partner with.
Yeah, brilliant. And I think it's I mean, it's really, really interesting that you've defined four pillars, and as you talk through them, they all make complete sense from my, you know, fairly limited knowledge, I guess, of these types of things. But the recommendations, I think that's really important as well, because presumably the idea for this is that you called it at the beginning kind of low stakes assessment for somebody to go through around you know their ability to prompt.
Yeah.
How important are those recommendations, and what sorts of things are you giving people in terms of information? Is it based on where they've maybe displayed like a development area? So say on pillar number one, you know, knowledge of biases, and is it if you haven't scored particularly well on that, you'll get recommendations about how you can improve?
Yeah, I think that's spot on, really. And that's the thing with assessments, isn't it? Is depending on what they're used for. Generally, it's kind of the so what. Okay, I've got this. You've shown me areas for development. Some people may take that and know what to do, or they'll kind of be self-starting in that sense. Others will appreciate in the report, it might say, go away and practice this. Go away and find some people you could speak to about it, and so on. Then the other bit, which we're developing a new area, is our training offer, because enough clients are now saying, well, actually, do you think you could show us a 101 demo? So we're creating some sort of asynchronous materials, and we've got the ability to run some live workshops too. Brilliant. Which exactly to your point, which hopefully they're not going to tackle every single item across the four pillars, but gets you going. And I think final thing I'll mention is, I think this is something that's all about practice. So you could have the kind of chalk and talk or the lecture material, but yeah, seeing's really, really, really is believing on this. You've mentioned it, you said about team members. When you see that prompt result in an image or a video, or it's quite a wow moment. And I think it's really crucial employees see that for themselves.
Yeah, I quite agree. I think it's one thing doing these tools, but to be able to get those recommendations and absolutely potentially training interventions and all of that sort of stuff that you've talked through, maybe based on development areas, then that's the real crucial part. Because I guess then if they do the assessment again after they've gone through that intervention or whatever, the likelihood is that they're going to improve in that area, and they're going to increase their knowledge. So you mentioned right at the beginning about increasing awareness and potentially getting people using these types of tools. So in terms of the promptability tool that you guys have developed, I mean, you talk about it being as part of the staff development process. Do you have any particular, is there a particular sector or vertical that might get the best use from this, or is it genuinely a tool that can be used across the board?
It's a really timely question, actually, because just a couple of days ago, overnight, we got an email from a potential partner in Malaysia, and they asked exactly, they said, oh, really interesting, it's getting a lot of hype in Malaysia.
Mm.
What sectors, what type of person, you know, where would you use it? And I sort of thought, it felt a bit flippant to say, well, everyone, because that was my first reaction. But actually, I think if you are in an office job, related job, or actually, and depending, because it's, you know, it's multimodal. By that, I mean, you put in a prompt in text, but you might want to get image, you might want to get a diagram, you might want to get text, you might want to get video. You can then imagine, basically, all of the workforce needs to work with text, image, even translating into foreign languages. So I was kind of thinking, it's actually relevant for everyone. But if I was to say where are we seeing some early traction or people that are really thinking about this, I'd say professional services. So your lawyers, your consultants, your bankers, because, you know, they charge high fees. They're looking at value add for clients and spending as much time with clients as possible versus maybe some of the mundane. Interestingly, we're seeing oil and gas and telco. So that shows you maybe within the firms they're looking at efficiencies.
Yeah.
You know, as I said at the start, I work a lot in education, and that's got huge implications about maybe how teachers create lesson plans, how children can get one-on-one personalized tutors, how you can produce content at scale. So I think hopefully that's a roundabout way of saying it is, I think, applicable throughout industries and even throughout the organizations. We're seeing chief execs say, well, actually, we need to know about this.
Yeah.
Even if we're not going to be using it day to day. You know, you mentioned yourself using it, and then you've got kind of right through to people entering the workforce. In fact, younger people are growing up with this now.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a bit like them growing up with the iPhone or something.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It's funny because, like, even in our, the world in which we operate, so kind of small software business, we've got, you know, various different people who would be a department in our organization. And I know for a fact that we've created user stories for software features using ChatGPT. And something along the lines of the prompt might be, assume the role of a grade A Silicon Valley business analyst and create user stories for the following. And what it did, Rohin, was absolutely incredible. And it was just like scenarios, stories, all written in Gherkin, right. And you copy that and you could, and that at a time, and obviously, it, you know, you need to thoroughly review it and all that sort of stuff. But that at one time would have taken like a day and a half to pull together, and it did it like in 3 minutes or whatever, and it just like created all of these things. And I don't know this for a fact, but I'm sure I was speaking to a developer fairly recently who said, I don't know whether it wrote his code, but it gave him a big support with writing code and highlighting bugs and all that sort of stuff as well.
Yeah, just on that, I think, so I don't come from a software engineering background at all, but more and more I see and what I hear, apparently, like things like GitHub Copilot or even ChatGPT, the implications it's had for speed of writing good code apparently is quite exceptional. And so some people say, is the next language of coding actually kind of English again because you're writing script? I don't know, but I'm hearing huge productivity gains. Someone said that they were doing a PhD where coding was part of it. They reckon they could have shaved 9 to 12 months off of it. These are anecdotal, but I sense that it's got huge implications.
Oh, I totally agree. Well, maybe we can be software engineers after this as well through our use of...
I mean, that's just a really good observation of, like, what did you previously think you couldn't do? Didn't have the confidence, didn't have really the awareness. It's just a good question. Now, hopefully for students in the classroom and stuff, it allows them to open their eyes more. I mean, it should hopefully be empowering. I know there's a lot of, you know, and rightly, regulation and needs to be there and knowledge of risks. But yeah, to your point, why not?
I mean, you would, it is actually really interesting to sit and think about it. Like, oh, you know, I could never be, and I would, you know, if I had my time again, I sometimes flirt with the idea of, would I have gone into software development? Would I have become a software engineer? Because I really like that side of things. I'm like one of these people who would love to be more techie than they are in reality, sort of thing. Obviously, I work for a software business, but I would love to have been able to do that. And I just think to myself, that's interesting. Maybe I'll use ChatGPT. I can build an application of some sort. Who knows?
Well, I can. So here's something like website building. I mean, you're an entrepreneur. You've probably at points thought, right, I need to knock that up. I need someone to do it.
Yeah.
Some things like that. Now I wonder, you know, is the script that it comes up with good enough? Can it empower you to do more, basically?
Yeah, really, really interesting. So, and I know it's a really difficult question, this one, and it might not be something that you're able to answer at the minute. We kind of touched on it earlier. Who knows what's going to happen in kind of 5-10 years time? But what do you see in term, just in the short term future with these types of tools? Presumably, they're just going to get used more and get better.
I think basically, I completely agree. I think the way you said it's spot on. You know, version 3, version 4, version 5, and then the bit of an arms race we're seeing with the Amazons, the Googles, and so on, used more, And I think what I'm also seeing is, and rightly so, companies thinking, but a bit worried about just using ChatGPT in our organization. What about confidential information? So these almost local large language models, or if you want to sort of say an ability to use the chatbot that's safe to your company's context, with much lower risk, I think that might be increasingly going to be the case. And I think the cost of doing these things is falling.
Yeah.
Back to your point, I think more frequent and more advanced.
Yeah. And it's funny when you talk about the cost as well, because I mean, I think ChatGPT-3 or whatever is the typical go-to for me, which is free. I don't pay anything. I mean, it's a rhetorical question. What would you pay for something like that if they were to say, look, you need to pay, you know, a few hundred quid a month or whatever, for the value that I get from it, it'd be difficult to say no to that.
I think that's spot on again, and that's you being as a business owner. I think that is ultimately the mindset, isn't it? You're thinking, does it allow my employees to do more? 100%. Does it allow them? You know, some is quality of life. Actually, you also want to have a happy workforce. If it allows them to spend less time, the return on investment's there. So I think that's the thing, actually, to your point. If you can prove the return, you pay for it.
Yeah, quite agree. Brilliant. Well, Rohin, it's been really fascinating to talk through these different areas. It's an area that I have to say I'm really interested in, as you know, because we've talked about it numerous times in the past. I also love what you guys have created, the Promptability tool. I think it's a fantastic tool. It's so innovative. I don't think there's anything else like it out there. But as I always do with these types of podcasts, I want to give you the opportunity to kind of, if you want to give a little sentence about how people can contact you if they're interested in Promptability, how do people do that?
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Rich. So we're at hello@promptability.io, or hopefully when the LinkedIn posts are shared and so on, you can reach out to me directly on LinkedIn as well, and Ben Williams, my business partner. So there's a few different ways in which you can contact us. We are ready to use. We're very lucky, actually, because as test authors, you're always thinking where to host it. We, with Evolve Assess, we've got a ready-to-use, user-friendly, safe, secure environment. So, you know, people can be rest assured in terms of data, the quality of the output. So we have a full solution there, actually. And we are happy to discuss with you the number of licenses you may wish to use. So just to explain, we'll talk to you about your needs, figure out which employees may like to use the test, and then we can discuss with you the different kind of plans we have. And actually, really exciting, should the training offer be of interest, we can also discuss that, whether that might complement things. So yeah, we're ready to go. We're already being used, and yeah, we'd love to discuss with you more about how we can help your organization get on the playing field with Gen AI.
Absolutely. No, that sounds brilliant, Rohin. And yes, this will be, we'll put this podcast out on LinkedIn. There'll be a kind of a blog post, maybe even written by ChatGPT, who knows?
Yeah, it has to be.
To go alongside it, and we'll put your LinkedIn profile in there, Rohin. But thanks ever so much for making the time.
Well, thank you.
Lovely to talk to you as always. And yeah, hope you enjoy the rest of the day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, Rich, for having me on. Awesome.
Cheers, Rohin. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Psych for Business. For show notes, resources, and more, visit evolveassess.com. Mike.